All right, Genesis 25. We're continuing as we study, but we're transitioning. We've been talking about Abraham, but last time we talked about Abraham's legacy of faith, and that legacy of faith was to be passed on. Tonight, sadly, though, we're going to see his son Isaac, and we're going to see what happens when a faith is neglected. Isaac inherited so much from his father. He inherited land. He inherited the blessing of God. He inherited, actually, the start of a wonderful family because if you remember last time, Abraham sent his servant, Eliezer, to go and to find a wife for Isaac. And so Isaac marries Rebekah, and they have this wonderful beginning. And that's actually point number one. So go ahead, I skipped the introduction. Point number one is a promising start. A promising start. If you remember that, Isaac, he's got everything going for him. And if you were to read chapter 25, the first verse, you'd find that Abraham marries again. Sarah has died, and he marries a wife, Keturah, in his old age. And he has more sons. Abraham has more sons, and there are many groups of people that would trace themselves back to the lineage of Abraham. But that was later in his life. And you notice in verse 5, and Abraham gave all that he had unto whom? Unto Isaac. But to the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he yet lived eastward and unto the east country. Why did he send them away from Isaac? Well, because he wanted to protect the heritage that had been established with Isaac. Isaac had been raised to honor God, and sadly, as Abraham's has these children from other people groups and other tribes, these he knew what would happen, that these people would not follow the Lord, sadly. But those are choices that Abraham made. Verse number 11 of chapter 25, and it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well Lahai Roi. Verse 12, now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abram. And it goes through all of the names of the sons and the lineage of Ishmael. But we're not going to focus on Ishmael, we're going to focus on Isaac, because Isaac has received the promise, and it's through Isaac that eventually Messiah would come. So that's why the scriptures bring us to Isaac. Now of all the patriarchs, of Abraham, of Isaac, Jacob, and Jacob's 12 sons, the least is recorded about Isaac. But what is recorded about Isaac and his wife Rebekah, some of it is good, which we saw last time, but other not so good. And you know, it's very often the case, this is nothing new, you've probably heard this before, but it happens often among nations, among Christian families, that often it's the second generation of faith, that often falters, that often begins to neglect the faith, so that sometimes by the time it reaches the third generation, it can be unrecognizable. It commonly happens, a cycle that would take place, where the father would, Abraham's a good example of someone who's called out of a pagan land, and God does something amazing in his life, and he raises a godly family, and now Isaac and Rebekah are not going to carry that legacy out so well. So there's things that we learn. But that same cycle that can happen in a family can happen in individual lives when we begin to neglect our faith. And that's exactly what we'll see with Isaac and Rebekah tonight. So let's pray, and we'll continue on. Lord, we thank you for your word. I pray that this message would speak to our hearts. It would encourage and challenge us to be vigilant and to contend for the faith and not to be slack or lazy, but to press forward with determination and by your grace. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. So, verse 19, and these are the generations of who? Okay, thank you, Mrs. Thompson. Verse 19, and these are the generations of whom? Of Isaac, Abraham's son. Follow along with me tonight. Okay, if you stay engaged with a pencil or a pen in your hand, I promise you it'll be easier to stay awake. Guaranteed, if you jot a couple of notes down, you'll stay awake. Works every time. If you don't want to stay awake, then don't pick your pen up or your pencil up. Or don't sit up. Just kind of cozy in a little bit. Sit back. That's if you don't want to stay awake. If you want to stay awake, sit up, get a pen out, get ready. Works every time. Almost. Verse 19, these are the generation of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife. 40 years old. So there's still hope for some. You don't have to, sometimes God does things later on. 40 years old, Isaac waited, and before his dad said, well, young man, it's time for you to have a wife. And he sent the servant off. Isaac was probably ready a lot before that, but he waited patiently in God's timing. So there's a promising start. Again, we talked about that, how Rebecca had lived a godly life, and they recognized that, and she was brought back to Isaac, and they began this wonderful life together, a very promising start. Verse number 20, Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebecca to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. Now, you want to note that name Laban, because in the coming weeks, we're going to hear a lot about Uncle Laban, all right? That's Rebecca's sister, brother, Laban. And he is quite the character. So Laban the Syrian. Now, verse 21, Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife. He prayed. He sought the Lord for his wife. Why? Because she was barren. She was barren. Boy, it seems to be that this was an unfortunate problem in this family. Because remember, even Sarah, Abraham's wife, she was part of this family too. So she's barren, and he entreats the Lord for his wife. He prays, God, give us a child, give us a child, give us a child, and he prays. What better way to start a life together? They seek the Lord, they pray, they've laid just the right foundation. But remember, it's not always how you begin, it's more important how you finish, right? It's more important. There are many people that are off to a promising start and a good beginning, but don't always finish as well as could be desired. So they pray to the Lord, and they ask for a child, and God says, okay, how about two? And so Rebecca discovers she's pregnant, and in the days before ultrasound, she doesn't know, but she just knows, wow, I'm getting quite large. And I don't know if she began to guess that there just might be two babies in here. At some point, she realized, not only did I get one, but the Lord's given me two babies and twins. And remember, and boy, in these days before, any of you husbands that have been in with your wife during the delivery, that's a stressful experience. I just did it four times, and I was always really uptight and nervous. It's just like, do you remember the I Love Lucy episode from way back with Desi back out in the way. How many of you saw that? You remember that? That's a famous one. You don't know that? Go. Okay, somebody does. You look it up. Yeah, they're out waiting there, and they keep coming out. You know, Ethel, and it keeps coming out. And all right, you guys need to go watch TV Land or something. Anyway, it's a great one. But I just that anxiety. Now, in these days, like, it's hard enough. It's hard enough to have one baby. I can't imagine going through twins, especially in these days, before antiseptic, before doctors, but what? Antiseptic. Anything healthy, like clean, to keep it in. Am I correct? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Okay. Before any of that, and she's going to have twins. So all this happens, but not, it gets even better than that. Not only does she have twins, but she's got feisty twins. I mean, these boys are wrestling in the womb. Now, it's a good thing. I think if my mother were to have had twin boys, we would have wrestled in the womb, because as soon as we came out of the womb, I think, we came out wrestling with each other. There were me, Josh, and Aaron, and we used to do really, you know, rough stuff. Aaron's head was knocked against many a bedpost through his childhood. So if you have any questions, that explains it right there. But it was many, many a time, and we would be rough and rowdy. But these boys, right in the womb, they struggled. They struggled. Verse number 22, and the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? That's one of those great old-time sayings, right? If it be so, why am I thus? Like, if this is supposed to be, why is this happening? What is going on, she says? What in the world is happening? And she went to inquire of the Lord. So this is before, before she even is giving birth. I mean, there's something going on inside of her. And Lord, what is happening with these children? What am I experiencing? And in some way, the Lord reveals himself to her. In verse 23, the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb. and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people. Now look at this prophecy she receives. And the what? Elder shall serve the younger. The elder shall serve the younger. Why? Why? What is the whole point of this? The elder shall serve the younger. There are two in there. Is it that it was God's plan for these two people to be enemies with each other? No. That's not what it was, I don't believe. And you can read it actually in Romans chapter 9. And the quoting of the prophet, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. And that's a whole discussion for another time, but let me give you the explanation to suffice for tonight. What's happening here is this is all about bringing the birth, not of two little boys, but this is all about bringing the birth of a nation. And what is that nation? Israel. But it's not even about, I said it's all about bringing the birth of a nation, but that's only partway to the goal. Because the nation is not the end in and of itself. The goal of, it's not about bringing two boys into the world. It's even more than about bringing a nation into the world. It's about bringing the Messiah into this world. Everything we're reading in the Old Testament is bringing us to Jesus Christ. So what happens is God is going to bring the Messiah by calling out and choosing a people, a nation that he's going to work through. And those would be the children of one of those little boys that's about to be born, and his name is going to be Jacob. But later, Jacob's name will be changed to Israel. Two nations are in your womb, Rebecca. And the elder is going to serve the younger. Is that how it was supposed to work in Eastern times? Not at all. But what God is doing is he's upsetting the order of things. Remember, he says later to his people, he says, I didn't choose you because you were the mightiest and the strongest people. I chose you because you were the least of all people. It wasn't that God was raising up a mighty nation. It was that God was going to demonstrate his working through unlikely circumstances. Why do you think it is how many barren women are in the line of the Messiah? Why do you think that was? Because God was going to do something miraculous. Why do you think it was that there are, believe it or not, there are two harlots, there are two prostitutes in the line of the Messiah? Did you know that? There are two. Because God was not going to do something ordinary. God was not going to, Tamar, God was not going to do something as would be expected. God was going to do the unexpected and the supernatural. So even from the picture of these two children, he's going to show that he's doing something unusual. The elder will serve the younger. So there's amazing things happening. So what I'm doing here tonight is I'm showing you major Bible themes, but I'm also bringing out some application about people who begin to neglect their faith. So verse 24, and when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. Verse 25, one of the funniest verses in the whole Bible. Verse 25, and the first came out red, all over like a hairy garment. And his name was called, and they called his name Esau, the red boy, red boy. And out comes red, and they're like, you know, everybody's all excited. You know, everybody shows off their baby. A lot of babies, folks, are ugly. I mean, I don't know if you didn't realize that. Not yours, of course, but other people's. Babies can be ugly. Every now and then I've seen a cute one. But, you know, that baby comes out and it's like, oh, it's a baby. It's so baby-like. You know, it's you know, sometimes. But this one was a bit exceptional. And Esau comes out, and all the handmaids and servants are there, and they're like, he's so red and hairy. And that's poor Esau. He's a hairy guy. He's a hairy little guy. Now, I remember when all those Cody babies came, they had a lot of hair on their heads, right? All my babies were all bald as could be. But this baby had that kind of hair everywhere. I mean, later on when he's an adult, you know, in order, and I'm kind of giving away the story, but they try to trick their dad, and the one brother pretends to be the other, so he puts this disguise on. He's got to put goat hair on his hands to make his dad think he's his hairy brother. I mean, that's a hairy guy. Something wrong with that boy. But anyway, Esau. But Esau grew to be a strong man. You gotta. I mean, you gotta compensate somehow. You don't want to be the hairy guy. You be the mighty hunter, all right? So the first came out red all over like a hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. Verse 26. And after that came his brother out. And his hand took hold on Esau's heel. He's like, hang on there. You know, and he wanted to get out. He wanted to stop him, but he couldn't. And his name was called Jacob. And they named him right from the beginning. They weren't real creative. They weren't real creative when they saw their kids. They're like, oh, you're such a little red hairy thing. Let's call you Reddy, all right? And then, because that's Esau, it means red, right? And then the next one comes out, he grabs up, oh, did you see that? He's such a trickster. And that's what they named him, trickster, deceiver. What a great name to go through life with, right? These parents, what are they thinking for their kids? All right, Harry, and, no, not Harry, hey, Red, trickster, let's get together here. All right, this is the family. What a sight, what a sight. Yep. These are my two boys. All right, I'm just going to stop going with that now. All right. So his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew. And now here's the life that they began. The boys grew. And Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field. Okay? Cunning hunter, a man of the field. He went out, he killed it, he drug it home, and he ate it. Well, he cooked it first, but he did all that stuff, all right? He got out there, he's a hunter. He hunts down. Now, we hunt nowadays, right, with high-powered rifles and scopes, and we put trail cams out there, and so it's not as fair as it was in those days. But, I mean, he goes out, he tracks it down, he gathers it, he hunts it, he kills it, and he eats it. I got a little escapee back there. Hey, you coming to church or going out the door? It's my Nehemiah. All right. So, is he supposed to be in the nursery? Okay, he's back in now. He was just taking a little detour along the way. Oh, he was just looking. So, where were we? Okay, so Esau is a cunning man, verse 27, a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. So he preferred just to hang around the tent, and Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Whoa. What did we just read there? And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So I just made a quick note here. And that's point number two. They had a promising start, but they began to make some bad decisions. We begin to see family failures. We begin to see family failures. Now, this is just a small seed that's planted in the life of this family very early. But we'll see by the end that it grows into an extremely destructive situation. And what happened was, at some point, Dad and Mom picked favorites. Now, we could talk about that. This isn't really a family raising topic class that we're doing or anything like that. I think we all should understand pretty clearly that that is a big number, big, glaring, obvious mistake that was made in their family. Would you agree with me? I mean, a problem. Isaac identifies with Esau more, and so they become close. Rebekah identifies with Jacob more so that they become close. It's a big mistake. But, there are no perfect families, right? We understand that? There are no perfect families. However, It is extremely common. It is extremely common in church life and church family life to watch children grow up, and very often there are glaring mistakes that are made in the family life of church members. So I would challenge you and ask you this question, Mom, Dad. When's the last time you read a book about being a good parent? When's the last time you read a book about being a good husband or a good wife? Or when's the last time you took time to sit down with your spouse and to say, hey, let's have a little checkup. What am I doing? How am I affecting you? How do you think we're doing with this child or with that child? What do you think's happening? And just to from time to time, take inventory. From time to time, do a little family checkup. Because you know what? I like going to the doctor for a checkup when he says, hey, you're doing good. I remember I was like 18 years old or whatever, went to the doctor, and I'm like, I guess I'm supposed to go to the doctor like every year now, right, or something. He's like, oh, you're fine. No, you don't need to. I guess that was later on. That's a great kind of checkup, right? You go to the checkup, and he's like, oh, no, everything's good. See you next time. But I guarantee you, if you do a checkup on your marriage, I don't care who you are in here. If you do a checkup on your marriage, if you do a checkup on your parenting, you'll find something wrong. Do you believe that? Yeah, of course you will. Of course you will. That's why we have to live lives where we're constantly checking up, where we're constantly coming back, where we're constantly examining, where we're constantly testing, where we're constantly changing. You know, one of the worst things that you can say as a parent, as a husband, or as a wife, one of the worst things you can say or attitudes you can have is to say, well, I've always been that way. Ever heard that before? Or said that before? Well, I've always been that way. Or, that's just the way I am. Now, in any life, we ought to accept our loved ones just as they are, right? Unconditional love. But what is the gift that then we should offer to our family and loved ones? The willingness to change, a willingness to adjust, a willingness to adapt, a willingness to submit, and allow God to change things. But that never happened, and it may not be a glaring thing like favoritism, but it could be something. But what you'll find in Isaac and Rebekah's life is that something that began very early went unchecked for years and years and years and years. And we all know when things have been neglected for years and years and years, how hard it is to go back and undo that. It's hard and painful. But nonetheless, sometimes it needs to be done. But often, when faith is neglected, family is neglected, and our children can look at us, they can see hypocrisy, they can see... I remember having conversations with many, a good Christian young person when I was in Bible college, having conversations and hearing so often people say, boy, if marriage is what my parents have, then I don't want it. I wouldn't want to be married. And I was astounded at how many people that was the case for them. It's troubling. And there's no perfect marriage, there's no perfect family, but what a blessing it is to grow up in a home where you say, you know what? I would like to have a marriage like my parents had. I'd like to have a family like I was able to have. That's a blessing that many people do not have the privilege of inheriting. And so then it would be my responsibility to protect that, to guard that, to preserve that, to not get lazy, to not just assume, well, it'll just work out, it's just going to happen. No relationships just happen. They're maintained, they're developed, and they're worked at by the grace of God. And so what happens, and it's such a sad thing, there are many, many people that would look, people that even sit in this room tonight, would look and say, boy, what I would give to grow up in a home like that little guy gets to, what I would have given to have that experience, what I would have given to have that. And so then those of us like Isaac and Rebecca, it's our responsibility to preserve that, to walk with the Lord, to not become lazy. But it began with family failures. That was the first mistake. And look how it just gets worse and worse and worse. Because of this favoritism, there's this rivalry that then festers in the lives of Esau and Jacob. Verse 29. And Jacob sawed pottage. He cooked up some beans. Okay? And Jacob cooked up some beans. That sounds delicious. And Esau came from the field, and he was faint. Okay?
Oh, I am so tired. I'm so tired, and I'm so hungry. I think I'm going to die.
Well, he probably wasn't going to die. Now, he's just a little crazy. And verse 31, and Jacob says, I've got a little plan here. And he's true to his name, and he concocts this conspiracy. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. I've got a deal. Let's make a deal. Let's get together here. Step right up. Why don't you do this? Why don't you sell me your birthright? And if you sell me your birthright today for this very good deal, I'm going to exchange for you this pot of beans.
Well, that sounds like a good deal to me.
All right. Sold. I'll buy it. I'll purchase it. Now, and Jacob said, verse 33, well, this was too easy. That's what Jacob says in verse 33. And not so many, he's like, wait a minute. This transaction was just way, way too easy. All right? What is going on here? And so he says, well, swear to me this day. Make an oath. Make an oath that we've got a deal. Okay, okay, okay. Just give me the beans already. And he sold his birthright unto Jacob. But there's a moral to the story. What's the whole point of this? Verse 34, then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. The man, here's the deal. Esau has zero character. It says next that Esau despised his birthright. Despised his birthright. And I would submit to you that both of them, in a way, did. Isaac thought that a birthright would be something he could connive and, or not Isaac, Jacob thought that he could connive and get it and get things his way. But Esau, he doesn't care about anything except the moment. Esau is a classic example of a fleshly controlled person. But remember, his parents have conditioned him in many ways to be that way. There's been no spiritual development here. He's been picked as daddy's favorite because he can hunt and he can kill and he can do this. So they don't worry about anything else. And here he is. He despises his birthright. In other words, he doesn't care about it. He doesn't think about the future at all. I mean, Esau, do you realize what's happening? Do you realize what you just did? Oh, you know, whatever. At least I had my dinner. And he goes on. He's a crass, crude person. He despises his birthright. So trickery, fleshly living, the family is just breaking down. Then there's a third mistake that is made. So they had a great start. Family failures begin. Now Isaac falls into a trap of generational sin. He falls into a trap of generational sin. You realize that each one of us has the opportunity to build a spiritual life off of a foundation that's been handed to us. You understand what I mean by that? I mean, be it your parents or a church or some influence in your life, you are, especially in families, you are handed off a spiritual foundation from which to build. It may not be much of a foundation. It might be, well, Dad and Mom at least sent me to Sunday school. Or it may be, you know, my Aunt Lucy or somebody, she helped me in this way. And it may not be much, but you may have some spiritual foundation. Isaac had a great spiritual foundation to then build off of. But, and mark it down, with every spiritual foundation in every family, there also comes spiritual baggage. There also comes spiritual baggage. What do I mean by spiritual baggage? I mean this. There are personality traits and character flaws that are clearly passed from generation to generation. I mean, it's clear. I mean, you could argue that if you want to, but you see it yourself. You see families where somebody has a strong temper. You look at children, and eventually they begin to behave. Not in every case, but often they begin to pick up some of the bad. The privilege we have, though, is remember, we have a spiritual foundation to build off of. We can choose to leave the family baggage behind and to begin anew and afresh. But that doesn't happen with Isaac. There's a generational sin that continues. Let's see what happens. Verse 26, or chapter 26, verse 1. There was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, to Gerar, and the Lord appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt. So don't make that mistake that your dad made. Go not down into Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, my laws. For Abraham's sake, I will honor this promise to you. So Isaac dwells in Gerar. And the men of the place... Now, what we're about to read, you might think we're reading about Abraham, but we're not. We're reading about Isaac. The men of the place asked him of his wife. And she said, she is my what? She's my sister. Have we heard this story before? Yeah. Same story. Before Isaac was even born, we have this story of Abraham going into Egypt and saying, Sarah is not my wife, she is my sister. Isaac does the exact same thing. She's my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife, lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. But the lie can't stand up over time, and lies are always found out, tell the truth, but he picks up this trait from his dad. Verse 8, and it came to pass when he had been there a long time that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out at a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. So Abimelech looks out and he's like, what are they doing? They ain't no brother and sister, okay? There's something else there. And he figures out that he's been lied to. And so Abimelech calls Isaac, verse 9, and says, behold, of a surety, she is thy wife! I mean, he's just like, she's your wife! How saidst thou, she's my sister? And Isaac said unto him, well, because I said, lest I die for her. Another brave, noble husband. Well, what was I supposed to do? Die for her? Like, yeah, Mr. Knight in shining armor. He says, was I going to die for her? In verse 10, Abimelech said, what is this thou hast done unto us? One of the people might lightly have lien with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought guiltiness upon us. And Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he that toucheth this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. So kind of like a humorous twist on the story a little bit, but Isaac continues to make these mistakes. Genesis chapter 20, he says, the Lord is a jealous God, visiting the iniquity, Exodus, not Genesis, Exodus 20, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth, or unto the fourth generation of them that what? Do you know what it says? You don't know that passage? Oh. Visiting, well, let's turn Genesis, Exodus chapter 20. Let's look at it. It's in the Ten Commandments. Right in the middle of the Ten Commandments. Exodus, not Genesis, Exodus chapter 20. Verse 4, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So every person has a choice to make. You can continue in the sin of your generations, of them that hate God, or you can make the choice to love God, to break the chain of the generational sin that takes place, and turn your heart to God. Well, I've always had this temper. My dad had this temper. My grandfather had this temper. My great-grandfather had this temper. After all, we are... I'll let you fill in the ethnicity of your choice right there. Okay? We know that. We know this is a reality. But we make excuse for it, don't we? Do we not? We make excuse for it. We say, well, it's just my mother was like that. My grandmother was like that. It's just the way we are in our family. Well, no. Well, yes, that is the way you are in your family. That is the way we are in our family, and it's sin. It's wrong. And the generational, what some people would call a curse, I wouldn't necessarily use that line, but the generational judgment will continue until that's broken, until a heart, and all it takes is one generation to say, you know what? This, I'm not going to pass this to my children. I'm going to break that. But Isaac just continues in that chain, and the family begins to break down. And you know something? What's going to happen? He's going to lose one of his sons completely. Which son is that? Esau. He's going to lose Esau. And he's going to almost lose Jacob. But for the grace of God, Jacob returns at the end of his life, which is another awesome story. Isaac starts great, ends poorly. Jacob starts terribly and ends spiritually victorious. It's incredible. But Isaac and Rebekah do not break that generational chain of sin. So back here, our last couple of points here. In the meantime, point number four, and I'll do this, we'll just browse over this point. Just stick with me. Point number four, in the midst of these mistakes and these errors, do you know what Isaac does see, though? He sees material blessing in his life. He sees material blessing. Why? He's inherited that from his dad. Abraham has received a promise. Isaac inherits the promise. And things, materially speaking, go very, very well for Isaac. Verse number 12 of chapter 26. Then Isaac sowed in the land and received 100-fold. And the Lord blessed him. The man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. You read down verse 17 and following. You can read it on your own, but I tell you what happens. There's all these wells that Abraham had dug, all these wells that for the herds and whatnot, and a lot of the people around had filled in the wells, and Isaac goes around taking the wells back and digging new wells and expanding and growing, and there is blessing of the Lord even despite the mistakes that have been made. And that's the gracious hand of God. But do you know what happens in so many people's lives? I've seen people whose lives go well, physically and materially speaking. Do you realize you can grow up in a Christian home, you can learn morality, you can learn work ethic, you can learn drive, you can learn determination, and you can turn your back on God, and you can prosper in your life materially. You can. And our children could do that. That's why, parents, it's so important that we do not raise successful children, but we raise spiritual children by the grace of God. Because we can raise to succeed and to earn and to work, and those are all good things. They're wonderful things, but they're second. They come second. Don't mistake material success or even material blessing. God has ordained this world to work a certain way. And if you follow his economic and ethical principles, you will, all things being equal, live a good life. But you can live a spiritually bankrupt life. Don't we see that in America? Don't we see it? We see a world that is, we see it no matter what they tell, no matter what the Republicans and Democrats tell you about the economy, we have so much stuff, it's unbelievable. I mean, this is the best time to ever have lived. Hate to break it to you. It's the best time to, you know, you're doom and gloom, long for the days of old. There's never been a better time materially to live at all. I mean, people, despite all the genetically modified organisms in our food, we're still living to be 80, 90 years old, all right? Despite the problems with this and that we don't like, we have the most amazing healthcare in the whole world. It's incredible. What a wonderful place that we have to live. What wonderful times we have to live. I can communicate with friends on the other side of the world instantly. I can see there, I remember watching the Jetsons when I was little, and they were reruns. Watching the Jetsons and be like, and being in fourth grade and be like, can you guys imagine if you could pick up the phone and see the person right there? I mean, we said that. And literally those words came out of my mouth. Like, that would be so cool. And now it's just like, oh yeah. It's like, of course we have that. It's an amazing time to live. What brought that to be is a heritage that we received, where we learned determination and drive and work ethic and morality, so that even people that are successful today, they're successful because all of Western civilization is built on a foundation of Christianity. Whether they are aware of it, well, they're not aware of it because they don't teach them that in school. But our whole civilization is built on Christianity. And though how people, we're completely unaware of it, but we live in a prosperous time, and so people just assume that, well, everything will always be this way. So we succeed because in some ways our country, at least still ethically, I would say, even though our morals are bankrupt, we still have the ethics of honest business and it still is somewhat there. A legal system based on morality, though it's slipping and sliding away from us. And so because of that foundation, that heritage, we live in unbelievably prosperous times. But we can't mistake prosperity for spiritual life. A family can't do that, a nation can't do that, and a church can't do that. I was thinking about this week, and this is just to bring it into the context of a local church. It's important for a church to be growing. Do you believe that? I believe that. It's vital for a church to be growing. However, the pace at which it grows, that's dependent on a lot of different factors. So some churches nowadays are entirely focused on growth. They're focused on growth. And do you know what happens? They grow. Other churches, you know, they neglect that. But let's just say that some churches are entirely focused on growth and they grow. But a church should be focused on health, on being a healthy church. A healthy body does what? It grows. If a church isn't growing, this is just truth. If a church isn't growing, it's not healthy, okay? Because that's God's plan for a body to grow. Now, some people may move away, but and new people come. I'm not saying there's a benchmark and it has to be this. But if a body doesn't grow, it's not healthy. But not every growing body is a healthy body, right? There's some growing bodies that aren't too healthy. There's some. You can get a group of cells in your body that grow like crazy. And they'll kill you. So you focus on health and you'll grow. You may not, and it's the same with the family. You focus on finances and you may be financially successful. Okay? Or you focus on the spiritual well-being of your family and you let God follow with the finances. Right? Just be faithful to God. Focus on health and spiritual life. And if there's no growth and there's stagnation, do an examination. Am I really healthy? Where am I sick? But don't mistake the material or outward blessing for a true working of God and for health. Because that would have been a big mistake for Isaac. It was a big mistake. And so finally, we come to a sad verse. And that's the last point, which is really the conclusion. What begins, and I hate to end on a sad note, but what begins, sadly for Isaac and Rebekah, is the beginning of heartaches. The beginning of heartaches. They finish their days pretty sad. And it doesn't happen here in this last verse. It happens with their sons going to war with each other. One son's going to want to kill the other. The other has to flee. They don't get to see their grandchildren. But it all starts in verse number 34. Of chapter 26. And Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. Now look at verse 35. Which were a what? A grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. It's very difficult for any parent to escape grief of mind over children. It's going to happen sometimes. But how devastating this grief when Isaac and Rebekah knew that they were much responsible for it. They knew that. And sadly, there's no restoration that takes place. I will tell you, though, the best thing about the grace of God is that as long as there is life, and as long as there is breath, there is opportunity for restoration and reconciliation. It is always there. Because Jacob and Esau will reconcile at the end. Esau's life is still a disaster. He never repents truly. But he does at least reconcile with his brother Jacob. And years cannot be made up for. They didn't grow up, they didn't raise their families together, they didn't enjoy together, they didn't have family dinners together, they didn't have any of that stuff. But reconciliation would still happen, it would still be possible. So what I would leave you with tonight is to heed these warnings, to take note of what took place in this family, in this life. They had such a heritage to continue and to build off of, but they neglected the faith. They neglected to pass it carefully to their children. But then also, if that is the case in someone's life, seek with all that you have to humble yourself, to go back to a child, to go back to a son or a daughter and to say, I'm sorry. I may have failed in this area. We can't have years back. I can't make up for this. But today going forward, I'd like to have a new relationship. I'd like it to begin again. Pastor talked about that several months ago, the story of Nancy Reagan and one of the children, where they said it would never be, they wouldn't make up for years lost, but they would have a new relationship going forward. Not always possible. Some hearts are cold and won't be, but don't let your heart be that heart. Don't make the mistakes that Isaac and that Rebekah made in their lives. And I'm no expert on these things. They're complicated issues, and I just pray by the grace of God that He would keep me, my eyes open, and keep me from being prideful and assuming that I can do it on my own and raise a family and for me and my wife, and for the same for you and your families. And be a part of a local church where you know you have a pastor and church family that pray for you and your family, and that'll fight for your family. And let's pass that heritage of faith on carefully and faithfully to our children and to those who come behind us. As the song says, may all who come behind us find us faithful. Let's be dismissed in prayer tonight. Lord, with quiet hearts, we come to you now in this last minute. And Lord, I just want to give folks a moment to reflect and to seek their own situations, look in their own hearts, and make resolutions to leave tonight by your grace, to make changes or to make adjustments, small ones but measured ones. Help us, Lord. Thank you, Jesus, for your love, for your grace. Dismiss us in your care, we pray in your name. Amen.